Today's show is sponsored by Talkspace, the online therapy company. For a fraction of the price of traditional therapy, you can pick an experienced, licensed therapist you relate to and feel comfortable with. Each and every therapist has at least a master's degree and has completed over 3,000 hours of supervised work. To match with your perfect therapist, go to Talkspace.com/boom. And to show your support for this podcast, use code BOOM to get $30 off your first month. That's BOOM, Talkspace.com/boom, B-O-O-M.
You are Locked On Cavaliers, your daily podcast on the Cleveland Cavaliers, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
Hello, everyone. Welcome back to another episode of the Locked On Cavaliers podcast. As always, I'm Chris Manning, your host from Fear the Sword. Today, Cavs have an opponent for the second round. They will be squaring off against the Toronto Raptors, their opponent from last year's Eastern Conference Finals in the second round of the playoffs. That series starts on Monday, 7 p.m. Game 1 in Cleveland, Game 2 in Cleveland on Wednesday. So, Cavs get that opponent. I think that's going to be a really good matchup for them. I think it may be their strongest and toughest test out of all the teams in the Eastern Conference because how Toronto can defend the Cavs. Cleveland, of course, should be favored in that series. Cleveland has the best player. I think probably has the second best player. Maybe the third best player. I think like depending on what kind of Kyle Lowry we get, what kind of DeRozan we get, those sort of things can fluctuate a little bit, but the Cavs should be the favorites in the series. I'm very curious to see how they defend DeRozan, what this means for Kyle Korver, how the rotation looks, and what kind of defensive adjustments are made heading into the second round. And we're going to have more coverage of that series. On Monday, we'll have a preview with Sean Woodley from the Locked on Raptors podcast is the plan for Monday. So we won't get too much into that series today. I do think the Cavs are favored. I do think that's a pretty good matchup for them. It would have been very fun, I think, to see the Cavs play the Bucks. Maybe a little bit more heat there, and we'll see how much the Cavs feel threatened by the Raptors, how much the Raptors can really push the Cavs to uncomfortable places. Because I don't think their first round series really indicates a team that's necessarily ready to do that. They very much struggle with the Bucks at times, and look a little shook even as they won Game 6. Even though they hung on late. So, should be an interesting series. Starts Monday, 7 p.m. Game 1 in Cleveland. Game 2 on Wednesday. Both of the games are on TNT. Today, though, not going to talk NFL draft. Not going to talk Cavs Raptors. I wanted to do something sort of different. So, the guest of today's show is Sam Allard. He is a reporter with Cleveland Scene. It's an all-weekly in Cleveland, if you're not familiar with it. And I called up Sam. Called him on my phone, so the quality is going to be a little different than what we're used to. I talked to him about the Cavs Stadium deal. This deal that's going to get Quicken Loans Arena renovations, what that means for the city, what that means for the county, what that means for the Cavs, and sort of the implications. We talked for almost half an hour. He also gave some thoughts on the Cavs at the end that you'll hear that I think are pretty good. And it was recorded before we knew who they were going to play, so just keep that in mind. But I think it's an important conversation to have. I think it's interesting. I think it's just something I wanted to do on an off day. And Sam, I think, along with Vince and some of the other guys over there at Cleveland Scene, I think have done just probably the best reporting on this topic in Cleveland. They understand it to a higher degree than I do. I learned a lot on this podcast just by talking to Sam. There are certain things that you'll hear me just kind of making sure it's very clear. Because this is a very complicated thing. I think this podcast is a good primer. But Cleveland Scene has a lot of great coverage on this. And I think if you're going to go anywhere for coverage online and detailed breakdowns and accurate information of the stadium deal and the finances of it, I think you certainly have to go there more so than the other publications in the Cleveland market. So enjoy that conversation with Sam. Again, we'll be back on Monday with a full-on Cavs-Raptors preview with Sean Woodley of the Locked On Raptors podcast. And again, Cavs Raptors starts Monday. Talk again on Monday. Have a great weekend. Hope you enjoyed the Browns' draft picks, Myles Garrett and Jabril Peppers, if you're a Browns fan as well as a Cavs fan. And we get back to Cavs basketball on Monday. Have another Locked On Cavaliers episode on Monday. And we'll talk to you then. So now here's my conversation with Sam Allard, a reporter from Cleveland Scene, about the Cavs Stadium deal, its implications for the city, the county, the franchise, and a whole lot more. Hope you guys enjoy. Talk to you soon.
Today's show is sponsored by Talkspace, the online therapy company. For a fraction of the price of traditional therapy, you can pick an experienced, licensed therapist you relate to and feel comfortable with. Each and every therapist has at least a master's degree and has completed over 3,000 hours of supervised work. To match with your perfect therapist, go to Talkspace.com/boom. And to show your support for this podcast, use code BOOM to get $30 off your first month. That's BOOM, Talkspace.com/boom, B-O-O-M.
You are Locked On Cavaliers, your daily Cleveland Cavaliers podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network.
Rush into Old Navy today for up to 50% off store-wide. Get dresses from $15 for women, $12 for girls, plus up to 75% off clearance for the whole family right now at Old Navy and OldNavy.com. Valid 10/16 to 10/20, select styles only.
Let's just look at sort of the first thing. I just want to say you've done, I think, like very thorough reporting on this. Just for someone out there who maybe doesn't know exactly what's going on with this Q deal, what are some of the basics that people you think people should know when they're thinking about this and looking into this?
The basics of the Q deal, yeah. So the Q deal, or as the Cavs call it, the Q transformation, is this elaborate financing agreement between four parties, between the Cavaliers themselves, the Cuyahoga County, the City of Cleveland, and Destination Cleveland, which is the region's Tourism Bureau. And it facilitates, through a 17-year financing agreement, the significant exterior upgrade at the Q. Your listeners may have seen pictures of it. There's this huge glass and sort of wood facade that will now be on, or that will be on Huron, and it creates an enormous amount of space inside the arena, sort of an atrium space that is being pegged as sort of like a dining and bar and gathering area outside the actual bowl. The bowl of the arena, the court and the seats are pretty much good. There will be like 700 or 800 seats lost in the construction, but primarily this is to increase the space from the entrance to the, before you get inside to your seat. That's kind of like the basic, the basic thing.
Yeah.
I mean, are you interested in like the funding, like the specifics of the funding as well?
Everything about this. Because for me, and I think for the listeners of this podcast, I think there are some really interesting implications of this. Because I think if you're looking at this from the Cavs perspective, you can certainly understand that they want improvement. And I think you could argue that the Q doesn't come improvement. I think, and I think it functionally like as a sports story, just because you look at the Cavs thing, it's a Dan Gilbert thing. They want to have an all-star game. And it's part of a larger, I think, trend that we've seen where cities are looking to get, teams are looking to get cities to pay for stadiums and pay for arenas and pay for these upgrades.
If they can get it, why not?
Exactly. Well, and like let's look at the Dan Gilbert thing. He, of course, owns the Cavs, he has paid a lot in salary. He's paying a lot for Tyronn Lue. But tell me if I'm misunderstanding what he's actually going to pay. He's really not going to pay anything other than rent, if I'm not mistaken.
Yeah, and the whole thing's sort of unclear to me. I mean, right now they pay $1.2 million, sort of a paltry rent, to their landlord, the Gateway Economic Development Corporation, which is a joint county organization established back in '92 when the whole Gateway District was initially conceived. And that was when Jacobs Field and the Gund Arena were both built back in the 90s. They have proposed to increase their rent, to the tune of $5 or $7 million a year for the next 17 years. Their grand total would look something like $122 million. But one of the challenges in this deal is that all these numbers are sort of estimates. They're just projections. They're thrown out there, so no one really knows what it's actually going to cost. And one of my concerns as a reporter who's looked at this a little bit more skeptically is that the, you know, the county council and the city council have both greenlit these pieces of legislation without, I think, sufficient information to justify it. I mean, we're essentially writing blank checks to Dan Gilbert and the Cavs to, you know, manage this construction project however they like, and we won't ever know how much it actually costs. They're under no legal obligation to open their books for the public. So once we give them the money, it's, you know, it's all gravy for them. And that's what I find frustrating.
Yeah, and I think it's worth, I mean, mentioning too, it's like the city of Cleveland and Cuyahoga County aren't exactly cash flush. They're not exactly
certainly not.
They're not in good financial spots. And the Cavs, as much as they, I think that they've pushed back a little bit in the sense that they've made this money, and Gilbert in particular has pushed back that they have made money. The guy owns Quicken Loans. He's incredibly rich. He donated lots of money in the last election cycle.
The Cavaliers. He owns the Cavaliers, which are, you know, at last valuation, I think was at $1.2 billion. Yeah. And as we've seen, as I'm sure you've seen, I mean, one thing that arena renovations do for franchises is increase their value. It redounds to his advantage a lot more than to the city of Cleveland or the counties to improve the arena.
Yeah.
I mean, the benefits to the region over and above the benefits that we already get for having it are marginal. It's not like there's going to be added jobs. There's no permanent jobs added in the project. I mean, you've seen a lot of support from the local labor and construction groups because there are, I think the estimate is about 2,500 construction jobs, which is great. I mean, that's terrific. That's a huge project, and a lot of those will be local and minority and women-owned businesses, which people have campaigned for, and that's really important. But it's not like there's going to be 1,000 new permanent full-time jobs because of an exterior enhancement. It's all aesthetic. It's all aesthetics. And as Len Komorowski, who's the Cavs CEO, has said, this is the essential goal is to keep the arena competitive on a national sort of the regional landscape. They're competing with Toronto and Buffalo, Columbus, Indianapolis, Louisville, all these cities for major touring acts. And having, and well, the big one is Detroit with the new Little Caesars Arena. To kind of stay on pace with the state of the art, you need to have, a really glitzy, nice looking arena, which I sort of, you know, would argue, but that's his stance.
Yeah, I can certainly, like, I understand what they're saying with that. Like, I think they want an all-star game. I think that's pretty clear. I think they do want, like you said, they want the major tours to come through. But if you look at a lot of, like, the data we've seen, and you, I think you know this, the data and studies that have been done indicate that these deals don't actually bring in as much money as they really do. They're not typically good deals for cities. The jobs that are created, you're working, like, what, if you get 19 big tours, let's say, rough number, and 41 home games plus, you know, 16 playoff games or whatever, that's not that many nights of work for people who are working even more jobs. They have to functionally would have to have another job.
No, and the bigger thing, don't forget, Chris, that, you know, the Cavs and the Monsters and the Gladiators are going to be playing at the arena regardless of an upgrade. I mean, the only people that they're enticing would be touring acts, big bands, you know, the A-list, Justin Bieber, you know, whoever. I don't even know who's like an A-lister anymore. Ariana Grande or whoever. The Beatles, Bruce Springsteen. I mean, those are huge acts, but it's not like the Cavs are going to have fewer ticket sales because of the – in fact, actually, they will have fewer ticket sales
because
they're losing seats.
Yeah.
So, you know, it's a lot to consider. And to me, the benefit seems – it's just a really tough sell for this much public money. It's a lot of public money. And the thing is, I mean, like back in the Syntax in 2014, there was at least an argument that we had an obligation to pay for this. I mean, I was sort of more persuaded by the opposition, but you could make the argument a lot more with more of a straight face that, you know, the public had an obligation to pay for this. This is literally just a handout.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it was interesting too, because they've made it very clear that the Syntax cannot pay for this. This is like a separate thing. Do you think when you look at the Cleveland government, the city government, the county government, do you think some of this is on them? I mean, because the Cavs
absolutely.
Is,
I mean,
is it, 100% does the burden fall on them?
Yes.
To not betting
here's a big reason why. I mean, I can be annoyed with Dan Gilbert and the Cavs, but the bottom line is that they're a corporation, and they, you know, are looking out for their own bottom line. They want to make money. That's like their raison d'être. You know, that's why they exist, to make money. It's incumbent upon elected leaders who have to look at quality of service of their constituents before they look at profit to really vet the deal in a more thorough way. I mean, there was no negotiating on behalf of the public. As you probably saw, this deal arrived fully formed, presented to the public in December of 2016. And mm-hmm. since that point, it's been ratified virtually untouched.
Yeah.
I mean, there has been no meaningful amendment. There's been no attempt to, you know, sort of scrap it and go back to the drawing board to come up with some actual community benefits for constituents. Another big trend, you know, you mentioned trends, is that for major public subsidies of renovations and new arenas, the owners will often find ways to give back to the community. And I'm talking in significant ways, not just refurbishing 20 rec center gym courts, which was a nice gesture, but it's small potatoes.
Right.
We're talking about like major $1 million contributions to schools or to housing or whatever it is. I mean, the Greater Cleveland Congregations Group, which has kind of led the opposition thus far, they proposed something called the Community Equity Fund, which would assign a dollar for dollar match for community issues like mental health and job training and, you know, capital investment in neighborhoods. And that's, you know, it seems like sort of a ludicrous ask, but their whole philosophy is if you can like dig under the rock and find all this money for the renovations, why can't you apply the same creativity and rigor to find that money for, you know, actual community problems? And it's a question worth asking.
Yeah. Were there any elected officials that pushed back against this in a noticeable way for people that might not be aware?
There were several, yeah. I mean, so people tend to be a little bit more aware of the city council because it's just a little bit more theatrical and more fun. County council is pretty boring, but the final vote there was 10-3. The most consistent voice, not even against the project so much as just asking questions about it, was Councilman Jack Schron, who some people might – he's a Republican. Some people might remember that he ran for county executive against Armin Budish and lost. But he was asking really good questions throughout the deliberations and ultimately against it. His primary concern was that it was just moving too fast. He thought we should wait until the state passed its budget in June before we went ahead with this, just to see where we stand, because everyone's expecting that we're going to lose a lot of money from the state and from the federal government in the next year or two. Nan Baker was the other county councilwoman against it. She proposed that the Cavs bear the burden of the financing, which is, of course, a huge amount of money for the public. She said if it was $70 million instead of $70 million plus all this interest, it'd be a lot more stomachable for her. And then Yvonne Conwell was the third county council person. She represents the east side of City of Cleveland, and most of her constituents are opposed to the deal. So,
one of the things that was really interesting to me was that last day before, I think it was the day of the vote or the day before the vote, you had that very public show of, like, let's do this, like, this is why it's a good thing. Do you think there was any chance of this ever being blocked in a meaningful way, or at least being delayed in some form?
Well, I mean, they're in trouble now because there's going to be this voter referendum. And they were so dismissive of the opposition and their quest to negotiate a better deal that now they're just sort of – they're going through with it on their own. They've got a massive coalition of organizations who are gathering signatures as we speak, and we'll get a ton of them, and they're going to put it on the ballot. And if you look at Cleveland is not in support of this. There's a very good chance that it's on the ballot. Voters will vote it down, which would be an enormous – oh, my God, it would be so thorny and complicated trying to figure it out if voters said no to the contribution, which mm-hmm. is why Cleveland City Council probably should take the opposition a little bit more seriously and tried to find ways to, to renegotiate.
Mm-hmm. When would that vote be if it happens?
I'm not entirely sure. So it's the whole referendum process is – confusing, in part because they passed, as you may have seen, the city passed this ordinance as an emergency measure. They got a supermajority, two-thirds vote. Brian Cummins was the final councilman who changed from a no to a yes to give him this supermajority, which means that, you know, under certain emergency ordinances aren't even subject to referendum. This one is, but because it takes effect immediately, you could only this is hard to explain, but like the money, you would only stop the flow of money that hasn't already been incurred, and it's unclear what that will mean in practice. But there's a chance the vote would happen like in the September primaries or the November general maybe. And I don't know how much they will have done during the summer construction season. So I don't know, man.
That's actually my follow-up, because one of the things that they made sort of clear was that they would want to start construction this summer.
Dude, they're already starting.
They're already starting. Wow.
They're already on top of the queue. It's wild. They started immediately.
That's because I have not been down there since game two. Since they have been around and haven't. They don't. You know, their availability is independent, so they're not really even always down there. It's not even like a reason to always like be right there. That's they've already started. That seems kind of aggressive.
Extremely aggressive. It also calls into question the idea that they hadn't done any bids yet. I mean, presumably the stuff had to be worked out a long time ago if they've already got construction guys all over the roof. So I don't know. I mean, my cynical take is that the Cavs have been pretty dishonest through the entire process, and the promotion of themselves as this magnanimous community partner strikes me as sort of preposterous, and it's kind of soured me to the whole thing as I've been reporting these past few months.
Yeah, I mean, and just listeners out there, if you haven't read Sam's reporting, you should definitely go do that. It's been, I think, the most thorough and sort of detailed that we've seen. The Cleveland Pubs, I'm going to leave it at that because
I appreciate the plug,
yeah.
Man.
Yeah, no, I mean, you deserve it, man. Like, I don't think there's been enough functional like pushback against this from our local media. Gilbert, of course, is a big player in this, but how is his role in this similar or different to the role he played with the RNC coming to Cleveland over the summer? And are there any lessons to be learned from that event happening in Cleveland and the amount of time and money that went into that?
Well, two things. One is Gilbert hasn't been an observable player in the negotiations, at least not publicly. The one thing we know is that he was part of the lobbying effort, at least in one reported instance that I reported, that he was actually calling a councilman to try to change his mind to get that supermajority. But in terms of the negotiations itself, I don't know how much of a part he played. It's possible he was like on conference call or even sitting in on meetings. But I rather doubt it. I think Len Komorowski was kind of the Cavs face, and there's a couple other Cavs executives who were there throughout. In terms of the RNC, I mean, I don't know what to say other than that, one of the arguments that the Cavs made was that the upgrade, the enhancement would attract bigger and larger scaled events to the city. And, after the RNC, which is, of course, the biggest we could do, it struck me as sort of disingenuous. But I'm not sure about Gilbert's involvement in attracting the RNC. I know he was, probably part of the team promoting the city and promoting the queue, but there was the Destination Cleveland was played a much bigger role, who's the CEO there is David Gilbert, not to be confused with Dan Gilbert.
Is there any like direct connection between the Cavs and Destination Cleveland, and like are these things all sort of interconnected with working with one another, or are they separate?
Well, they are separate bodies, but they're all sort of connected in that like all their leaders sit on each other's boards and what have you. Len Komorowski, who's the CEO of the Cavs, is on the Destination Cleveland board. The financial advisor Tim Aftermat was the former chair of Gateway Development Corporation, which is, of course, the Cavs landlord. And Fred Nance, who's the county's bond counsel in all this, was a former lawyer for the Browns and is like a regular hotshot lawyer for the Cleveland sports team.
And yeah, he advised LeBron James way back when LeBron was 18, 19 years old and entering his pro career.
Yeah, I don't know much about that, but I had heard that, yes.
It's just like it's a funny, like, little small world sort of thing there, I think.
Oh, yeah. Well, I mean, welcome to Cleveland, man. I mean, that's like the whole...
Yeah, right.
It's the union club. All these dudes sit on each other's boards, and it's all kind of grossly incestuous.
Yeah. Last thing I have is, you look at Progressive, you look at Cleveland Run Stadium. Does this deal, potential renovations, set a potential standard that the Cleveland baseball team and the Browns might look to hit at some point in the future?
Absolutely, which should give Clevelanders pause. and seriously question whether or not we can keep doing this. Although one of the built-in arrangements in the current deal is the establishment of two reserves. One of the reserves will be used to cover shortfalls on the Q project. So if, in other words, if tax revenue doesn't equal the projections, there will be a reserve fund that will cover those shortfalls, despite the fact that the Cavs and leaders have said that the Cavs will pay for those. It's the public who will pay for it. But the other reserve is for future stadium renovations. It's sort of like a permanent stadium renovation fund. And the assumption is that the Indians, whose lease is up next, I think in the early 2020s, I'm not exact, 2023 maybe, that pot of money will then be used to sort of offer them a renovation deal or something to sweeten the pot to keep them to, for a lease extension or something.
Yeah. Let's make sure I got two facts here so people leave this kind of making sure there's well formed and possible. One, from my understanding of the Cavs' position, it is simply they're not the quote-unquote owner of the building, so they don't have obligation. That was sort of the argument I think they put forth on the Q Transformation website. And two, if this ends up happening, if this goes through, referendum doesn't happen, the public will be paying for the bulk, if not all, of the renovations.
Wait, sorry, what's the second one?
If this renovation end up happening, the public will be the one like functionally paying for most, if not all, of the renovations.
Well, that's hard to say. Again, you know, it's unclear. I mean, like there are all these numbers floating around. The Cavs will presumably be increasing their rent, you know, but it's not a 50-50 split, as has been reported many a time. The public will certainly be paying more of the total cost. But again, it's just like, you know, we won't really know unless we know the total cost, and the Cavs don't open their books, so we just don't know. But it's reasonable to assume that the public will be paying a lot more than the Cavs do. Yeah.
So the Cavs would be, I'm just curious about this. The Cavs would be the ones that would have to open their books. And this, but even though it's like not like their building, how does that sort of discrepancy work when it's funded by the county? Wouldn't that information at least some way be accessible, like via FOIA, via some other subpoena? Like, isn't there like a way that information could be available without the Cavs disclosing it?
We have access to the money that they give us and the money that that the public gives them. So we can request and have requested, you know, annual contributions to debt service and gateway bonds, for instance. And we, you know, annual payments that we get from the three sports teams and that we pay out in sin tax, things like that. All those things are, of course, publicly accessible. But the actual cost of the construction project, there's no way to know. I mean, the Cavs are managing that, and they just, you know, it falls under one of their many business practices, and they would never dream of sharing that with the public.
No, that's...
We've asked.
Of course.
We've asked, and we're sort of laughed out of the room.
Yeah, that's a fascinating... I think that's, like, a fascinating little... For their goals, that's probably smart, I would guess. That's probably smart PR, if nothing else.
Well, it's good business for their concern.
Yeah.
As is the fact that the public owns it. I mean, that's often cited as a benefit to the public, you know, the public ownership. But it turns out to be a real pain in the ass when we have to, you know, if you can imagine owning a house and having a tenant who tells you when it needs to be upgraded and then you pay for it, it's sort of absurd. I mean, the owner of a facility, if we in fact owned it and, you know, were the ones making decisions on it, we would decide when and, you know, how much renovations to perform. Yeah. We don't. We're in the back seat here. We're not driving this train at all.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, that's a pretty good analogy. But, well, thank you, Sam. Appreciate it. And,
excuse me.
You know, you're fine. Thank you so much. And everyone, make sure you go to clevelandteam.com. You can find Sam's work there. And if you go back, you can find all the reporting that Cleveland Scene has done on this. I think it's your best place to kind of learn about the pitfalls of this issue, in addition to searching some of how this has happened in other cities. I think, you know, you may not always like when your sports and your politics blend.
Let me just say before I go that I am,
yeah,
of course, an enormous Cavs fan.
Yeah.
And I don't want that to be lost, nor, you know, I think a lot of the opposition, it shouldn't be conflated with a, you know, anger at the team itself. Most of us are huge Cavs fans, and it's just skepticism about the financial arrangement, not about the team.
Yeah. Well, before we let you go, then let's get your how do you feel about the team right now, and B, what's your prediction to how the season plays out?
Man, it's it's tough. So I'm secretly hoping that the Bucks come back and beat the Raptors tonight and win the series, just because I'd love to see the Cavs Bucks playoff round in the second round. On one hand, because I think it's an easier matchup for the Cavs. On the other, because I just love Delly and I want to see him play some more. I think the Cavs will make it to the finals. It's hard for me to predict this, but I think they'll probably lose to the Warriors in the finals.
Yeah, I'm with you on that. The Delly, if the Bucks do play the Cavs, the Delly heel turn is coming, 100%. 100%.
Do you think it's going to be – who do you think the finals are in the West?
I think you probably get Spurs-Warriors.
Spurs-Warriors.
Yeah,
no, I was sort of leaning towards Warriors-Rockets just because they're just playing so well right now. And Spurs, for whatever reason, those two losses to the Grizzlies were disconcerting.
Yeah, I just kind of feel like Kawhi presents something really weird for Harden to deal with.
Yeah.
So I don't know. I mean, I could totally be wrong because the Houston could just space their way to win in that series. But I don't know if anyone's actually going to beat Golden State, though. Like, they're just
– There's just no – I just don't think there's any way.
Yeah,
I was wondering what without Kerr – I mean, what's his prognosis with the back thing? Is he even coming back?
No one really knows, I don't think. And it's crazy. Like, Mike Brown, of all people –
I know.
Like, good for Mike, but like, man, he has a history. Like, just that second hiring, and yeah, I don't know, man. It's crazy that he's like on that, like coaching that type of team after what we know about Mike Brown. It's interesting too. Like, I think like, there's another reality where like Draymond Green is this Michigan State guy. And he thinks there's always these little rumors that maybe Gilbert wanted him. If he was on the Cavs right now, he'd be the most, even if he wasn't as good as he is right now, he'd be the most popular player on the team. I have like no doubt about it. It's like he's the guy, he's on your team, you love him. If he's not, like, you think he's the absolute worst.
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely.
Yeah.
He'd be a really interesting puzzle piece on the Cavs too right now.
Him and LeBron on the same team would be like,
fucking insane.
Yeah, it'd be incredible to watch those two like defend a front court together. It'd be unbelievable. But thank you again, Sam. I really appreciate it. And just tell people real quick where they can find you on Twitter.
They can follow me at Scene Salard. That's S-C-E-N-E Salard.
Yeah, give him a follow. ClevelandScene.com at ClevelandScene, I think, on Twitter. Guys, we'll be back again on Monday. Series preview, game one of whoever the Cavs face, because we don't know yet as I record this podcast. But on Monday, you will have a full-on preview of that game, and we'll talk again soon.